Hello, this is Dr. Dimitrios Kostopoulos, and this is another episode of Precision in Clinical Practice, Boosting Profits and Patient Outcomes with Diagnostics. So once a year, there is a major event in the physical therapy community. It's called the Graham Sessions. It takes place in different areas of the country, and the top minds in the profession, they all get together and they discuss different issues, some of them contentious issues, and some of them done, I would say, not very publicly open, because there are some major ideas and issues that are being discussed that forward thinkers of the profession put on the table for the development of the physical therapy profession. So we went this year. Our podcast was there, and we got together with a group of people after the event. These are people who attended the event, and you're going to hear now some of the ideas that were exchanged and what are some of the key topics, some of the key problems, and the solutions for them. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Dimitrios Kostopoulos, Chairman of the Board of Hands-On Diagnostics. And this is another meeting episode of PT Innovation 2024. And this is very special. This is very different because we are broadcasting this live from, where are we? In San Diego. We are in San Diego. from San Diego right now at the completion of Graham Sessions, which is an event sponsored by the private practice section of the American Physical Therapy Association. And this event has as a purpose to discuss the various issues from the physical therapy industry. So today, this meeting, which might be a little longer than our regular meetings, will be twofold. We have people here with us who attended Graham Sessions, and I will ask them in a moment, because this is also what we promoted, this is what we advertised, that we're going to have you hear a few of the things and general ideas, not details, because this is a closed event. Graham Sessions is a closed event, so details of what was discussed are not open to the general public, but general ideas and concepts can be shared. So I will go in a moment around and ask people who are present in this room what were the highlights for them from the event and the top things, top problems, issues that they were able to identify during this event. But also part of this today's presentation event, we are going to discuss outside of the box, how can someone without having to deal with flash-based programs or other approaches that you need to be wearing a salesman's hat, how someone can really increase their bottom lines to 30%. This presentation is open not only to those who are on private practice, but clinicians who do not even have private practice and they want to delve into other areas, expanding their career opportunities and repertoire of knowledge. So I'm going to just randomly go around and ask some of you who were at the event. So Dan, I'm going to ask you first there. Let me just bring you in. For you, what were the highlights from the event? What were like the top issues of the physical therapy industry right now?
Okay, so this was the first event that I'd been to in a long time. You know, I kind of tend to keep my head in my practice and do our thing, and it was nice to be here, hearing like perspectives of people in the profession for a long time and, you know, the pain points. And I guess from my perspective, it's the industry has to propel itself in a direction to overcome the issues of declining reimbursements, shortage of labor. We felt that in our practice. And then we were discussing certain things like, I guess, alternatives, in the practice. What can you do to offset the declining reimbursements and so forth? And I mean, just being around like-minded people who are all, we're all in the boat together, sharing the same, you know, challenges. And it was good to hear like perspectives. And I realized how close, you know, how much closer I need to be to the profession and, you know, to make a change and be around the right people. So that I really enjoyed that, you know, and being connected to the group and feeling like I, you know, to make a change, you have to be close to the resources and, you know, and I enjoyed, you know, being here. It was awesome.
So let me then, I'm going to turn it over to you, Kostas, and just give us some of the highlights for you from the event.
So, yeah, that was my second GRAM sessions that we did. Very interesting and sometimes depressing at moments, realizing how many issues that are out there and how many problems different therapies have. And at the same time, it is, you know, you get that feeling of having a great need in the profession for a change. So now change is a very interesting aspect. How do you change and which direction? But from my point of view, my understanding or my needs, because all these people in that in this event, they have different needs or they come from different backgrounds. But based on my background, my offices, my state, because every state is different, right? Being in New York, the number one thing is that reimbursement has to be somehow managed, because it doesn't matter how many changes you do, how many innovations you introduce to your practice. There is a limit that after a number of years, you're going to have to fight against the decreased reimbursement. Mm-hmm. And then you have to reinvent yourself. But there is a limit to how much you can reinvent yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. And getting older also, you know, I'm getting older. You know, there is also the desire component for reinventing yourself. Not adapting, as we said earlier, not adapting, because I'm against adaptation. I don't like adaptation, because if you adapt, then you're going to exhaust yourself. Okay, the idea is to, like, for instance, if you have, like, we're all physical therapists, if there is a pressure of half a pound on your brachioradialis, you know, you're not going to do anything. You don't care. But through time, your finger is going to go through. If you leave this here for a month, it's a matter of time before you're going to see your index going through your brachioradialis, because it's only half a pound. Now, that's adaptation. Exhaustion will be when you see the finger going through your forearm. So I'm against adaptation. I'm more, I do care about the cause component, be at cause, because adaptation is more of an effect, you know. You just, okay, that's the situation, let me adapt, that's the effect. No, let's be at cause. That's what we need to do. That's my take. Mm-hmm. And again, if you want to know more about it, you're going to be part of the next GRAM session. It's going to be this wonderful place in Colorado Springs, in a beautiful hotel.
I want to bring in John for a moment, John Grupa, who also, he was outspoken also at the event.
John, what's your take on things?
What happened there?
Well, you had a collective grouping of people who work in all different avenues of the profession, whether it be educational, institutional, private practice. And they're all people who are looking for the forward thinking of the practice and looking at where our profession's going as a whole and trying to basically identify the problems and collectively come up with ideas for how we can make change to address the issues. As Kostas mentioned, reimbursement is a big one. How do we continue with all these new therapists and the shortage that there is in the workplace? But how can you expect us to continue to have these people come out and have to educate and become physical therapists and have large loan debt and yet not be able to make a viable salary because reimbursement is capping what these people can make. So yes, that is probably one of the common themes, was reimbursement has to be addressed going forward, and trying to identify what's the best way to do that. So it being a part of that Graham session, you were bringing in all different views, but one of the common themes is we need to be looking at how we're moving the profession forward. And that's what I felt was the best outcome of that, of being part of the Graham session.
Awesome. And if you don't mind, pass the computer next to Daniel and Brent, who can just share their viewpoints, because they are also very big in the area of innovation. AI, which was like a huge topic at the Graham sessions, there was a special session on that. And AI is really huge. And it's going to totally take over everything that you do, from the billing area, the documentation area, and everything else.
So what do you guys tell us your take from that?
Yeah. I think you took the words out of my mouth. My favorite section of the Graham sessions is when we talked about AI and how it's going to innovate many areas of how physical therapy is practiced. I think some of the most exciting parts that I think was shared among everybody was, the ability for autonomous documentation, right? I think that we're seeing stats as high as 60 to 70% of our profession is feeling burned out. And the large majority of that is because insurance companies have very rigorous documentation standards. And so if we're able to develop technologies that allow the documentation to be done so that we can focus and treat patients, I think that's going to go a long way into helping the providers feel more comfortable and enjoy practicing much more.
Just adding on to what Daniel said, I agree. I think practicing for 9 years before stepping into a different role and looking more in technology, one of the biggest sources for burnout for me was documentation every night and not spending time with my family. But also not being paid fairly for what I did and thinking that I could only see more patients in order to generate more revenue. When you insert automation AI into those two processes, can you maintain your patient volume while still decreasing your burnout, while improving your margin at the same time? And if I had that type of tool set when I was practicing full time, would I still be practicing? Is that what I asked myself at this conference? And the answer is probably yes, right? I don't think that I would have sought out a different kind of vertical in medical field had I not felt that burnout, felt like I couldn't be present with my kids at night because I loved what I did. I love being a physical therapist. So I'm really excited for those tools because it helps us as a profession move forward. And, again, we can fight payers all day long, but that's a long-term play, and we know that it's not always successful. But what we can control, right, is maybe fighting fire with fire. If they're going to use technology, so can we. And so can we make our day-to-day more efficient with those tools to optimize every dollar that we can for doing really good work with patients day in, day out, is kind of what I was thinking about during the conference as well.
So from my side, let me remove spotlight here so you guys can see everybody. Sky, I'm going to reach out to you in a little while as we move through the discussion. Since I discussed at this point only the viewpoint of the people who attended Graham sessions. So I just want to give you a little story at this point. And this is like the story, it's a true story. This is pretty much the story of Kostas and myself and how we managed to navigate through a system that has been very difficult. So I'm going to take you back, actually, to 1987. And why I'm taking you back to that, even if you were just born at that time or not born, is because that's when him and I immigrated to the United States from Greece, where we both had studied physical therapy. So we initially came to the States to do graduate studies, and which we did, and worked in different environments. And then in 1992, we decided to open our first physical therapy practice. And I'll tell you, we did very, very well, despite the fact that this accent is different than what many people are used to, despite the fact that many cannot pronounce our names, the 25 letters. I had a hard time to spell it when I was at school anyway. Despite all that, somehow, and despite the fact that English was not our first language, we managed to not just survive, but thrive in this country. And in 1992, we opened a single physical therapy practice. And from 1992 to 1998, we opened up a total of 13 physical therapy practices, servicing more than 3,000 patient visits per week. We were at that time the second largest physical therapist-owned company in the state of New York, aside from hospital and physician-owned practices, right? So, and then the way this is that somewhere in November of 2002, just before Thanksgiving, we received the letter that changed everything. This is the title, actually, of a chapter of the book that we have written, Private Practice PT Beyond 2020, the letter that changed everything. So the letter that changed everything is a letter that I wish you guys don't have to see, but my fears are that many of you have seen already, or you will see if you haven't. And that letter was from the very first insurance company that said at that time to us, unless you accept the new reimbursement schedule effective January 1st, you can no longer be part of the panel. You can no longer see patients with that insurance. So we had an average reimbursement before the letter of $130 per visit. And between 2002 and 2004, we received multiple letters like this, slashing reimbursement to more than 50%. Aetna from $120 to $65, Blue Cross from $140 to $55, United from $88 to $55. It was like an avalanche of a big problem there. So now I want you for a moment to stop and imagine this. I don't know how big your practices are. I don't know how much staff you have, how many clinics you have. But imagine back clinics we had about 157, I think, employees, and we had a payroll nearing $300,000 every 2 weeks. Okay? So just do the math. And when you have an organization that is you know, of that size, when you put a change, when you try to change something, how fast can you implement changes? I'm not going to say that there aren't people out there who are able to cause change very, very quickly, no matter if they have a huge conglomerate. I'm not saying that. But with the knowledge we had, with the way we managed our practice, it was very difficult for us to cause change within our organization in such a fast capacity to overcome a more than 50% reduction in our reimbursement. So what we end up doing at that time, we were not willingly, but we were forced to sell some of our locations. We were forced to lay off a bunch of employees. We consolidated some locations so that we can survive, right? But during this very difficult period, what we realized when we looked at our financial records was that an area that we were involved in, which was the performance at that time of electromyography testing, EMG testing, electrodiagnosis, EMG nerve conduction. Back then, we were not doing a musculoskeletal ultrasound. But at that time, we realized that that area was not affected at all. And to tell you, through the years, because that area is mostly regulated not by the, I'm sorry to say that, the weak physical therapy industry in terms of advocacy. And how can the physical therapy industry be stronger when only 5% of all physical therapists contribute to the Physical Therapy Political Action Committee, that is the body that can help change things through lobbying efforts? So that area is regulated by medicine, not by physical therapy. So very little change has happened in the reimbursement of those tests: electromyography, nerve conduction, evoked potentials, musculoskeletal ultrasound. Very little change, if any. So at that time, we said, okay, how can we take this area and enhance it, expand it within our practice? And we realized actually that in a very limited capacity, without really knowing so much what we were doing back then, what we were doing is we were introducing a totally different paradigm for physical therapy. You see, the commonly used paradigm for physical therapy is a patient comes in, you do a physical therapy evaluation, you implement a treatment plan, you do an intervention, there are various reevaluations and adjustments of the plan, you continue PT, and at some point you end care, or you continue the patient in a fitness program or whatever. But this is pretty much the common paradigm for physical therapy. So this model, first of all, is very limited to the CPT codes of physical therapy. All right, no matter if you do manual therapy using a McKenzie method or Maitland or Syriacs or whatever, you still bill 97140, no matter what type of exercise that you do. You'll do your 97110, 97112, or something like that, or 530. There's a limited universe of CPT codes. And because of that, physical therapists, the thought was that can only use this limited code, this limited universe of codes, which is not true, by the way. So instead, we introduced a totally different paradigm. And in our model, somewhere between the initial evaluation and the formation of a treatment plan, we incorporate diagnostic testing like EMGs, MSK, ultrasounds, evoke potentials to that appropriate subset of patients that would be benefit from this. So when you integrate, and then what you do is you take the results of these diagnostic tests and you use them for the formation of a more appropriate treatment plan, taking into account not only the physical examination testing, but also diagnostic testing. And this model has tremendous benefits, including an increase of patient outcomes and an increase in the practice's revenue. Now let's look at this for a moment. I invite you to look at what we use right now to evaluate a patient. In a physical therapy clinic, you have a patient with carpal tunnel, you are going to do a Fallens or a Tinel's. You have a patient with cervical radiculopathy, you'll do a Sperling's test, quadrant test, something like that. And other special tests depending on the condition. But let's look at the sensitivity of a median Tinel's and Fallens. 23 to 51% sensitivity. Now, just imagine, and for those just to understand what sensitivity means, if I have in this room where I'm at right now, 100 diagnosed patients with carpal tunnel or with cervical radiculopathy, and I have done outside of this room confirmatory tests, I know that they have the condition. These tests, the Tinel's or the Fallens or the Sperling's, will be positive only in 23% of the cases or 51% of the cases or 30% of the cases. Just imagine if you had 100 COVID patients and you had only a 23% chance to find their condition. Imagine if you had 100 patients who had foot-blown cancer and you used some type of diagnostic test that would find the cancer only in 23% of the cases. That's a little bit of a problem, right? So when you incorporate in the clinical practice other diagnostic testing modalities, these numbers change drastically. You have for carpal tunnel syndrome 86% sensitivity, and by the way, 98% specificity for carpal tunnel through EMG test. And let's go to a rotator cuff. You know, the musculoskeletal ultrasound for a rotator cuff tear is exactly, it has exactly the same sensitivity as an MRI. 92%. Okay. So these tests are very powerful and they can augment the physical examination we do to patients and the outcomes finally. As a matter of fact, we published a study in 2000 looking at the impact of electrodiagnostic tests on clinical decision making and also patient perceived benefit in outpatient physical therapy practices. And we found more than 61% of the patients changed their management. The physical therapy patient management had to change because of the result of an EMG test. So what do we want for the physical therapy profession for the future? Do we want physical therapy to be a primary care profession? Do we want patients, instead of reaching to another five different providers before they come to us, be able to come directly to us and us being able to service them 100%? So if that is the case, then you have to change the way we practice, because primary care, a primary care profession, emphasize in preventive care, in health maintenance, patient education, as well as the diagnosis and treatment of acute and chronic illnesses in a variety of healthcare settings. So if we don't, if we're not able to pinpoint properly the root cause of a patient's problem, then our solutions will be less than ideal. So it's something that has been already practiced in the military. And we know study after study, including the American Physical Therapy Association's value of physical therapy practice that was published this last year, is profound to show the cost savings for various conditions that measures sometimes to tens of thousands of dollars if patients reach out to a physical therapy first. But look, these are the components of physical therapy as a primary care profession. Yes, we will be the first point of contact. Comprehensive patient evaluation, patient-centered care, longitudinal management, collaboration and referral, health promotion and prevention. But look what is included under comprehensive patient evaluation. Diagnostic testing, which can provide better patient outcomes. So what are the diagnostics that a physical therapist can do? And I'm not going to tell you what the physical therapist can do, because in my viewpoint, and again, this is my viewpoint, and I've been advocating that forever now, physical therapists should have physician status. They should be able to order MRIs, X-rays, tests, blood work if needed, and prescribe medication too. And our education has been, for the most part, there to warrant that. It should be, physical therapy should be recognized by the federal government as physician status and paid as such. But this is not a future, it's a future task. It's not a task for the meek and the weak. It's a task for those who, for the lion hearts, I say. Okay, so, but currently, right now, physical therapists can perform by statute, by practice act in most states, and can bill insurance and get paid by insurance for electromyography testing, for musculoskeletal ultrasound testing, for somatosensory evoked potential testing, and for video nystagmography. So these are tools that can help pinpoint the source of a patient's problem. These are tools that can help physical therapists expand their practice, and these tests align with the overarching aim of primary care to optimize health and wellness. So here is an example. And this, the next three cases I'm going to show you, these are slides that a friend of mine, Bart McDonald, has shared with me, and he created them. These are real cases, real patients that walked into his practice. This is a 50-year-old construction worker with progressively increasing right shoulder pain. Okay? The pain has been worse, getting worse, disturbing his sleep, and starts feeling weakness. The patient was denied an MRI and presented for physical therapy before any other actions are considered by the insurance. Okay? And I have you here a little bit of manual muscle test and the stuff that they found on him. Okay. Why the patient was denied any other diagnostic test or anything? Because this is what happens. You have an injury, chronic or acute. You seek medical attention, the ER, the MD, or the physical therapist. You request to do an MRI because you feel that this patient has a rotator cuff tear. You want to know, this patient, is it a candidate for a physical therapy or it's a candidate for surgery. Well, you get a denial from insurance. Insurance tells you no. You have to get 3 or 4 weeks of physical therapy with no results before I give you authorization to get physical therapy. So essentially, to get an MRI. So essentially, what the insurance company says that you have to have failed PT after 3 or 4 weeks before you can get an MRI. So patient does an MRI, they have a rotator cuff, then they do operation, and then they are sent for post-op PT. Meanwhile, in the first 3-4 weeks, they have utilized all of their benefits towards failed PT. So what we're saying here is, what if when the patient walks in your clinic and you as a primary care provider, you are able to determine if this patient is appropriate for physical therapy or not? And if the patient is appropriate for physical therapy, you treat them. If not, you send them to the orthopedist for surgery. They come back to you for post-op. Won't that save more money to the system? But this is not what's happening. So this patient, when he came into the practice and looked like that, all right, just imagine if you were able to do this. Point of care ultrasound. Literally, in 5 minutes, you can stick on that patient's shoulder that ultrasound probe and you can see inside the patient's shoulder dynamically as the patient moves, not a static MRI picture, dynamic movement. So then, with that in mind, because you know what normal looks right here, you compare that normal to what you found in that patient, which looks different. Look at the right of the picture, looks nice. Look at the left of the picture, it looks horrible, right? So what you learn in these programs, in these courses, you learn to call this a supraspinatus tear with tendon retraction. And you are able then to make a determination what that patient needs. So instead of this patient needing 10 to 12 sessions of failed physical therapy, the patient needed to go get surgery and come back to do successful physical therapy. Case number two, wrist pain with CrossFit. 42-year-old male, pain in the dorsum of the left wrist. The patient was doing CrossFit. The patient had to stop CrossFit because of that. Now, this patient was sent to another physical therapist for 6 weeks for physical therapy, doing exercises with manual therapy, mobilization, strengthening exercises. The patient went to Bart's clinic, recommended by his neighbor, who was one of their patients. I mean, the moment the person walked into the clinic performed an MSK ultrasound. This is what they found. They found a huge ganglion cyst at the dorsum of the wrist. No matter how much physical therapy you're going to do, no matter the strengthening, the lasers, the whatever you are going to do, I mean, that ganglion cyst needs to be removed. Unless it's such where you can pop it, then it will, if the capsule is still there, it's going to come back. So patient was sent to a hand surgeon, and now patient did very well with physical therapy afterwards. And the third and last case, 57-year-old female with long history of neck and thoracic pain and stiffness, numbness and tingling in both hands and in the left lateral upper arm, mostly digits 2 and 3. The patient is diabetic, has rheumatoid arthritis, 4 weeks of physical therapy in a center owned by the orthopedist. So after 4 weeks, 12 sessions, the orthopedist says, you know what? I'm going to send you to do an EMG now. So the orthopedist, because he knew this does EMGs, he sent the patient for EMG. Well, I'm not going to bother you with these numbers now, what they mean, but what I'm going to show you here was that this test found that the patient had a median neuropathy on the wrist, carpal tunnel, and also a C7 radiculopathy. But look at this now. This test, guys, not only it showed that the patient had carpal tunnel, but those of you who are manual therapy freaks, I want to show you this. The EMG was able to identify that on the right side, the right median nerve, had both demyelination and axonal loss. Both the myelin and the axon of the nerve was affected, while the left median nerve had only the myelin affected. So those of you who are specialists in neuromobilization, which would be very appropriate to use here, let me ask you now something, and I'm going to stop the sharing so I can show you my image here. So let me ask you this. In mobilization, neuromobilization, you have three types of mobilization techniques, neuromobilizations you can do. You have a slider glider, right? You have a tensioner, and you have a relaxer. Let me ask you this. I understand if you have, let's say, a demyelination, it could be very much indicated to do like a slider glider technique to mobilize the area, get rid of any scar tissue formation, and you get more remyelination of the displaced myelin, right? That's totally cool. But if you have a patient who has axonal loss, who the axon is already vulnerable or slightly separated, if you go and you do a tensioner technique, what are you doing? You're making it worse, exactly. You are removing the distal from the proximal end of the nerve, the one away from the other. But how are you going to know that there is axonal loss so that you don't do that technique unless you do an EMG? And I know what some of you are thinking. You say, okay, I'm going to do manual muscle test. And if I find a three plus over five, then that means that the axons are not working and I will not do that technique. But by the time you are going to get to a three or three plus, you know how many motor units you have lost in that muscle? 50, 60, 70% of the motor units are dead before you find it. Because manual muscle test looks at the summation effect, at the summative effect of the motor units inside that muscle. While a needle EMG looks at an isolated motor unit, so you're able very specifically, I'm going to, pass it over to Sky for a moment, who is a specialist and board certified here in California on electrodiagnostics. You can identify a specific single motor unit with that. So you can see that early on, and you can determine very easily what is appropriate for that patient to receive. So then the proper treatment plan for that patient would be neuromobilization, sliders, gliders, no tensioners, based on the patient's condition, and so on and so forth. So here is some data. I'm going to give you data now. In 2013, Target Research conducted a national survey where they identified that only 3% of physical therapists in the United States knew that the physical therapist can perform and bill for these tests. Only 2% knew that the PT can bill. At the same time, you see what happens for physical therapy. Challenges, private practices receive less and less money. Reimbursement goes down. Medicare reimbursement goes down more and more and more. And profit margins, they've been going down to around 10%. And I'm going to share with you now some additional data. This is data published in 2023 for 2022 from the private practice section of the American Physical Therapy Association. The net profit of physical therapy has decreased to, on an average, 8.1%, while the median is at 7.2%. Now, how can a physical therapy practice survive with this profit margin when Medicare wants to cut another 3 or 4%, when Medicare wants to cut 15% if a PTA sees a patient, and so on and so forth? It is public knowledge that because of this situation, there are companies out there that they are making very little profit. Go and check, go online and check. ATI is a public traded company. They are losing close to $800 million this past year. Go and check USPH. They are in a profit margin of about 3%, and others very, very similar. And what is very worrisome is the trend. Look at the trend. From 2016 through 2022. I mean, this is not good news. So something needs to be done about it. And something can be done about it. So there are many different options. Some of the options is look outside the box, do cash-based systems. And sure, those are good options. If you are a good salesman or saleswoman, and you can teach your staff to be good salespeople, cash-based programs can be an avenue. But in my estimation, you cannot base a practice where you can fully expand it to a large scale just with cash-based. Most practices will find a hybrid type of model where they're gonna apply. But what happens with diagnostics, things are very different. When the national average of 1 hour of physical therapy is $97, the combination of an EMG and a neuro ultrasound at the national level for an average patient can be around $700. And that does not take into account just Medicare, or it's a mix of insurances. So here are locations, for example, of superior physical therapy. Bart, he increased his reimbursement from $104 a visit to $137 per visit just because of the incorporation of EMG testing. This is blend revenue between just PT or PT and diagnostics divided by the total number of sessions. Christina Panetta, from $90 to $125, she had 39% increase. Northern PT, from $85 to $116, 37%. And many others, okay? Many others that have had tremendous results. And we have some of them here in the room that they can share some of this. So in 2023, in September of 23, we conducted the same survey. Now, with the work that Hands-On Diagnostic has done in the past 10 years, we see some progress in what happens right now in the industry. 75% of physical therapists are aware of these tests. and 62% understand that they can bill for these tests. So that is really a big change. There are many clinical uses of MSK ultrasound. You do not just use it to diagnose what's happening in the joint. You diagnose the joint, the nerve, and even what happens in the pelvic floor. But you can use it in many different ways for treatment, including dry needling and guidance of the needle, for neuromobilization techniques, for muscle recruitment, for injections. If you are working with a physician, we can do joint injections. And physical therapists are fully recognized by AIUM, which is the main body that recognizes professionals who perform MSK ultrasound. So we're fully recognized and we become board certified on this. And physical therapists, not only they can become board certified, but they can complete residency programs like the one that we have, and they can create accredited laboratories for electrodiagnostics. And it can be used for localization, severity, and prognosis of disease process. So there are many benefits on this, and the benefits to the patient and the benefits to the physical therapy practice. So it is a matter where we want to take this profession and how we want to expand our role as providers, both clinically, but also financially for our practices. So I want, Sky, for you, if you don't mind, to you've been doing testing now for some time. You're very successful on that. You recently got your California board certification. What this has done for your practice, and how do you use it in your practice?
Let's see. practice. So I've been doing diagnostic testing for about 4 or 5 years now. To be honest, in the beginning, I was overwhelmed because I had just bought the practice for my partners, just to give some backstory. And you know, that process, if you have a private practice. And until this last year or two, really being committed to integrating diagnostics into the clinical practice has probably been one of the single most influential changes on the trajectory of the practice. We all went through the last few years where hiring was probably the most difficult thing you probably went through as a practice. And so these are tangibles that Demi mentioned. I mean, as far as recruiting, and you're looking for that bench of A players. You don't want just a therapist. You want a therapist. You want someone who cares and who's going to help define the future, not just for themselves, but for your clinic, right? And so for us, that was probably one of the first tangibles, is now being able to find those differentiated therapists, to the point now where we're going to be taking one therapist per year through the diagnostic training. That's just part of our clinical model now. It's just, we're not, hopefully more, right? So as we start to understand the public as it relates to diagnostic testing, going out to external referral sources and that kind of stuff, not just doing it all in-house, like Demi was sharing, with just the changes in your practice pattern that you can have just with the knowledge you gain to treat patients better, right? So now you're all of a sudden an expert, right? But now starting to develop that reputation with the outside world. For us, it's been huge. It's a significant part of, like I said, recruiting. So every new therapist that comes gets an introduction to diagnostics, even if they're not a diagnostician. Why? Because they need to understand, as Demi kind of quickly went through, the tensioners, relaxers, and gliders, right? Like, that's common knowledge, but it can be a little overwhelming for a new grad and all that stuff. When do I do this? And you look at that big data set. And, I mean, it's overwhelming, you know, if you don't know what you're looking at. But once you understand it, it's actually a quite powerful tool. And then if they struggle with that, ultrasound slam dunk, right? Because they just understand the anatomy. And I think that's probably been one of the most tangibles for patients. You're in the evaluation. The failed PT example that Dimi gave us, if you haven't seen that yet, it's pretty common. I'm in California. That's pretty common practice now, not just for shoulders, but for a lot of different things. And it's really nice to be able to say, even if the patient's insurance won't cover it, or you don't want to go through a process, hey, $150, let's do this ultrasound right now. I'll have your answer in a few minutes. And the peace of mind alone is worth it, right? So positive test or a negative test changes trajectory of that treatment significantly for both the clinician and the patient, you know, and that's probably been one of the, you know, I even get goosebumps thinking about it, just think about the EMGs I went through this week. And one of the guys had a negative, you know, just calm. Okay, let's treat the symptom now. We don't have to worry about this more serious radiculopathy that we were concerned about because you had a 2018 discectomy. You know, he was all worried about his discectomy coming back and in a problem at that level. So really fun to just kind of see those smiles. Those are the things that are on your stat list, you know? And so anything else I could expand on?
That's awesome. And I mean, we can have a dialogue.
I could go a long time. But.
And I want also John, because he is a totally different environment. I want him also.
Let me unmute.
Let me unmute. Sorry, guys.
Those of you who are watching from Facebook or Zoom. I want also John to give some of his experience and how
he utilizes this, because I'll tell you that John and his business partner, when joined our organization, they were among the very few individuals who had a total understanding that this can be a totally separate business. Something that is not like just a little niche that you add in your PT practice, like, okay, I do physical therapy and I also do women's health. I do physical therapy and I also do a program for dizziness. This is so big that can be an entire separate business that runs along your own physical therapy business. So, but tell us a little bit about how you use it and your experience with it.
From the onset, we thought about doing it separately to be an adjunct, because we also saw the great potential in not only doing it within our practice, which our practice was not going to necessarily, it would generate a lot of RMSKs, a lot of ultrasounds, but not a lot of EMGs just because of the type of patient population. But we did see that we have a lot of people in the area who it could take 6 weeks to 8 weeks to be able to get an EMG done in a local neurologist. So we saw the opportunity to the fact of the matter is we could then offer this as a service by going out into physicians' offices. So with that in mind, we immediately set it up from day one as a separate business entity. And so we have worked on getting credentialed, so we do it. We can do it in network if we want, but predominantly we do our EMG services in physicians' offices, incident to them, and allow them to do all the billing. So it has become a great adjunct because we're going in and providing this service for those physicians, which helps them with their patients. It has also indirectly become then a referral for us back to our PT practice, because now we're getting those, we have a direct relationship with the physician groups, orthopedic groups. So for us, it was a win-win in that way, but yet we separated it from day one to keep the entities as two different separate revenue sources.
Awesome.
I would say that the person who has done pretty much everything from the inception of the concept, the putting it into his practice and going through the entire cycle of this is no other than Dan Sage. So I'm going to ask you, Dan, just to share a little bit of your experience with this.
Yeah, just like Sky and John, you know, when I put diagnostics in originally, it had to serve a purpose. It really did. It wasn't necessarily the money per se. It had to serve a purpose. And the purpose was, if we can have better diagnostics with our patients and we can identify things a little more clear, and then if there's a treatment plan that can then help that, it makes sense, you know, really. And when we got our therapists involved in the neuromobilizations of the outcomes of an EMG, it kind of brought the group a little, much more cohesiveness in terms of how to take the utilization of a test and apply it in the clinic, which the value was tremendous, you know. And we, you know, we did a great job, you know, getting the diagnostics in. A little different for me was I sold my company 3 years ago. And at that time, we were doing 54,000 PT visits a year. And on the EMG side, we did well. We could have done even like you were saying, Sky. I love the idea of bringing a PT in and getting them increase their awareness of diagnostic testing and try and get more and more PTs trained in it. Because number one, you have more people providing the service, and it also brings the group a little bit more closer in terms of the awareness of diagnostic testing and how it, the benefit of it, right? We had one person who went through the training, and I had 15 therapists. So we had so much more potential. But when I sold my company, we still, the money we were generating in diagnostic testing times the, I got a pretty large multiple. It was a significant payout in terms of my sale, and which was fantastic. So there's so much upside to it. And I really believe where we're heading in our profession and declining reimbursements, we've got to do something different. And everybody wants to be autonomous practitioners. And this is such a massive tool to allow PTs to play a whole different game, let alone the outside business, which I think is phenomenal. So it definitely helped me out tremendously in my exit.
You know, physical therapy is,
I would say, in my viewpoint, one of the major things that aid society move into the right direction. But look why I'm saying that. When people move, they have less surgeries, they take less medications. They are less depressed. When people don't move, or may have pains, and their problem is unresolved, their pain problem is unresolved, they end up taking opioids, they get hooked on opioids, and then opioids lead to much heavier drug use. That makes people less capable in society, less thinking properly.
If people go in, they can
go outside, they feel pain, they get depressed. And what they end up doing, they end up having to use heavy-duty antidepressant medication. So you had an entire industry of pain management, medication, psychological help, that all of this depends on, to a great extent, to the inability of people to move free of pain. And if we can give a more effective answer, if we can improve those outcomes, even by a little bit, we can make a huge difference for society.
You see?
So I totally believe that physical therapy,
along with some other healthcare professions,
which are less drug-promoting professions, can be a changer for the future of mankind.
Humankind.
So I believe that
the diagnostic that we do,
getting the ability to provide a more accurate diagnosis, leading to a better non-pharmacological treatment
for our patients,
it can be developed. So, we'll continue the conversation here in this room, but those of you who are watching us from Zoom or from
Facebook,
I'm going to put up on the screen real quick this information. If you want to get more data about this, scan the QR code real quick, or go to hands-ondiagnostics.com. Or call the number. And by the way, join us for these webinars. We do them once, twice a month. If you go to ptinnovation2024.com, ptinnovation2024.com, you'll be able to register and attend these also in the future. So thank you so much for your attention today.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Precision in Clinical Practice and that you got some gems, some ideas that you can use in your clinical practice and also looking at the future of the profession. So another episode is done and hope to see you all next week. Until then, have a great week.